From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for March 22nd, 2019. Checking the calendar, the annual Realtors Home and Garden Show is this weekend at State Fair Park. And also at the fair, it's Rummage-O-Rama. And it's almost here. We're talking opening day is less than a week away. Well, those wacky Germans are at it again. They're commemorating 70 years of bratwurst with curry sauce. Who knew that was a thing? Well, the Mint is stamping colorful coins featuring two brats smothered in sauce. Just be thankful this podcast doesn't use pictures. Now, if you think that's wacky, check this out. Armando, the racing pigeon, was sold at auction for $1.4 million. That's more than some thoroughbred racehorses. Well, they plan to breed the big stud Armando to another racing pigeon that sold for $400,000. Putting it in focus, that's $1.8 million for a couple of flying rats. All right, in the studio today, we have Brian Kilb, Kyle Tedding, Isabel Wymero, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Pretty hard to follow that, Max.
Well, for the week overall, we lost a little bit of ground. NASDAQ gave up 46 points, shedding 0.6% to close at 76.43. Up still nice, 15.5% for the year. S&P stock composite 500 down 0.8% this week, losing 22 points to close at 28.01, up 12.2 year-to-date. Dow Jones Industrial Average shed 346 points, losing 1.3%. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 25,503, Dow up 10% even year-to-date. You know, Brian, as recently as the beginning of the year, they thought their earnings would be give or take 7.5% for the year. Earnings growth now is down to below 4%. Pretty good downward adjustment. Fairly short period of time. And then news this week, uneven data on the economy, as you're well aware. But it looks like things are slowing down.
Yeah, we've had a few months now where some data would suggest that the slowdown is real. And I think now that we're perhaps in the middle of it, you have a tendency to look beyond and kind of go, well, is this a temporary thing? Is the mentality of the fourth quarter and the difficulty of the fourth quarters, is that all made us retrench a little bit, and then perhaps that retrenching causes us to buy a little bit less, and then this becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, or is it just a slowdown for any number of different reasons, and will we begin to gather some momentum as we get further in the year? And, you know, I keep kind of parsing through the data, and I feel good about a couple of things, and then I feel bad about a couple of things. So I don't know that I have a conclusion yet in my own mind as to whether this is just a temporary slowdown or something that's going to accelerate, but I remain optimistic. There's enough good news out there right now that at least it doesn't appear to be something that might really be a negative trajectory, you know?
Kind of surprising, Kyle, to see the Treasury market activity this week. Yields hitting just about the lows for the year, intraday lows anyway. And as you know, the spread between the two-year Treasury and the 10-year is teeny now. So a flat yield curve doesn't help banks. Banks sold off quite a bit this week. But, you know, you're looking at a two-year at 2.4, a 10-year at 2.54. So that's not a whole lot of difference, flat yield curve, say, in English, folks. The 10-year's low. Nobody expects robust growth or inflation. And now with the two-year fairly low, nobody expects an upswing anytime soon. I mean, most folks are familiar with the fact that if the yield curve inverts, most of the time, not always, but most of the time we go in a recession, we're not that far from an inversion now, Kyle.
Yeah, and Bob, we did see an inversion in the 10-year over the 3-month T-bill today. Mm-hmm. And so you look at that kind of the ideal risk-free rate. What can you get on 3 months' worth of treasuries? And, you know, the 10-year now a little bit lower than that, falling now down to as low as it's been since early last year, January. And so, you know, I think the interest rate market is telling you everything you need to know about what the expectations are, that at the very least, you know, the growth we should expect going forward is not like the growth we've seen the past few quarters. That things probably will remain a little bit slower than they've been. And there's a number of reasons that we've talked about, you know, pretty regularly on this podcast. And it's not just things like tariffs. It's not just things like, you know, the direction the Fed's taken. But more broadly, we're just in the latter stages of this economic cycle. And, you know, things can tend to slow down as a result. And so, you know, I think you look at that interest rate market, it tells you everything you need to know. You look at the fact that now the Chicago Mercantile Exchange options index, or the look at what the Fed might do through the end of the year, now suggests there's nearly a 60% chance that the Fed's going to lower interest rates, the overnight interest rate, by the end of the year. And so I think, you know, markets broadly are pricing in a little bit of a slowdown. I mean, even in the stock market, you know, we're not overly expensive the way we were maybe the middle of the year last year. And so I think even the stock market reflects the fact that things are going to be a little bit slower for a little while here.
You know, I think that's a really good example, if I may, of what I was talking about, Kyle. I read a headline just as I came in here that, hey, the yield curve momentarily went negative and the market could drop 40%, you know. And I think for investors that are looking at that stuff, that see those headlines, they get scared, you know. And the yield curve doesn't cause anything to happen, right? The conditions cause the yield curve to happen. And I think if those things add up to be overly negative and cause people's attitudes, then indeed it might affect the economy. But as I say, fundamentally, there's still plenty of good things out there that hopefully just a short-term passing.
But yield curves are remarkably predictive.
Yep.
I mean, it's not meaningless data points. It's very telling that the curve is flat. It tells you in English that nobody thinks growth is going to reaccelerate anytime soon. And because we do a lot of work in the fixed income markets, it's also very telling because nobody thinks inflation is going to take off.
Yep.
So there are things that you can ascertain from the curve that are very helpful and very predictive. I think this time around, Brian, it's not going to be a surprise on inflation. It's not going to be a surprise on interest rates. It'll be about earnings. You know, Kyle, you and I were talking earlier about the forecast for next year. So let's get into that for a minute, because the numbers this year don't support a market being up 12%. The numbers next year help us get a better understanding of that.
Yeah, they absolutely do. And so, you know, early on, maybe you go back to the seminar that we put on in September, and we were talking about maybe 8 to 10% earnings growth this year, maybe another 10% next year. And obviously, we've discounted this year a little bit. What's interesting is that if you look at kind of the total dollar amount for earnings for the S&P 500, it hasn't fallen all that much as you look towards the end of next year. So what we've really done is front-loaded some of the earnings in 2018. Now we've taken that discount to what we expected growth to be in 2019, and then maybe getting a little bit of a boost in 2020 from what we had earlier expected. And so, you know, it's very early to say, obviously, for 2020 what we should expect to see, and we'll definitely get more data as time goes on, as companies start to report about the challenges they're having this year. But if we're even close to that number, you're talking about, you know, 10 to 12% for 2020, which is, you know, back in line with a market that should be able to grow fairly well. And while valuations right now look pretty fair, if the market doesn't run a bunch from here for the rest of the year, you could be talking about a market that on a forward earnings basis is relatively cheap again by the end of the year. And of course, markets tend to anticipate those kinds of things. They tend to anticipate that earnings growth. And so, you know, I think it's fair to say, at least from a valuation standpoint, that there's nothing glaring in terms of issues.
Isabel, what's your take on current events?
Well, right now there's so many headlines and events happening that can cause us as investors to want to react. I mean, you think about the trade talks with China, comments from the Fed, or even what's been going on with the rates overseas. And it can be so easy for us to fall into the psychological trap of wanting to make a really quick reaction or change to our investments based off these headlines. And they can really have long-term effects. And, you know, the real problem is, this is something we all know, that it's almost impossible to get that timing right. We tend to want to get out when things are already going bad, and then we don't want to get back in again until the recovery's already happened, and, well, now you're too late. So we just need to remember to sometimes take a step back and just remind ourselves that, you know, balance and diversification is what works for long-term investors. There's a reason that we're holding all these different asset classes. That's what helps you weather some of these storms of these headlines and weather the market volatility. I mean, if you just think back to the end of last year for a moment in December, it wasn't a great month, and people were nervous and thinking about reviewing things, which, of course, is always a really good idea to check and make sure that, you know, you're appropriately balanced. But now fast forward a couple months into 2019, and now we're up 12% for the year so far. You know, people aren't as worried anymore.
Good advice. Joel, let's bring you into the show. You know, worldwide, we had some data showing manufacturing is on the decline. Spending on services showed slowed sharply here in the United States. Why don't you bring us up to date on some of the economic reports that were released this week?
Sure, Bob. Yeah, and it gets back to what we were talking about earlier in the podcast about how, you know, we're getting uneven economic data, that we're, you know, getting signs that we're where our economy is still growing, but the growth is slowing. Today we had numbers from the National Association of Realtors on existing home sales. And, you know, the headline looked good because they were up 11.8% from in February from where they were in January, but they were still 1.8% behind, you know, the pace they were at a year ago. And in fact, for the year, the National Association of Realtors a couple of weeks ago forecast that they're going to sell about 5.28 million houses this year, which sounds good, but it's still would be like 1.1% lower than what they ended at 2018, and that's, you know, the lowest year they had since 2015. So, you know, they're still selling houses. There's still that sort of momentum going on out there, but it's just slower than you know we'd like it. We also got yesterday on Thursday we got a report from the Conference Board on economic indicators, leading economic indicators, and they showed some growth there again February over January, and that was the first time that index had grown in 5 months. So, you know, again, you know, getting back to what Isabel was just talking about, how we ended last year and things were, you know, a little, you know, worrisome for some people, but we're starting to see some progress now. One of the things that helped the leading economic indicators advance in February was the stock market. But again, the Conference Board, taking the longer look, said, yes, we see the economy continuing to grow, and let's remember that this is, we're nearing a record for economic growth as far as the length of the, you know, the expansion. But they're saying that they're expecting the economy to be growing slower than it did last year.
Kyle, you and I were talking earlier about how brutally difficult it is to forecast recessions, how most economists find it almost impossible to, with any degree of certainty, to talk about, you know, when it's going to occur, how deep it'll be, how long it'll last. I was using the expression of illustration rather of a sine wave to give folks a sense of just how difficult it is. If you think of a sine wave, and even if you connect the tops of the wave, if the trend is going lower, you can ascertain that, yep, things are slowing down. But with that sine wave, you got time when the economy is accelerating and deaccelerating. And if you're not careful, if the economy is temporarily accelerating, you extrapolate that into the future and you think everything's going to be fine with roughly three dozen developed countries in the world all marching their own drummers. If you think about overlaying three dozen sine waves on top of one another to try to ascertain direction, you get a kind of a sense of how hard it is. People like us are able to say, all right, things are slowing down, but it's really difficult, if not impossible, frankly, to say with any degree of certainty when it's actually going to occur. So I think it's important to know which way the wind's blowing. I think it's important to know that things are weakening. But number one, the trade issue could get resolved pretty quick. That'll change things. Number two, China could resolve things. and reaccelerate, that'll change things quick. Any uptick in inflation will help the commodities market, which will help the emerging world. So there's another. So you don't want to get locked in a viewpoint. And as we say repeatedly, you know, markets don't die of old age. But I had directed your attention to an article that talked about forecasting recessions and how so many times they're not driven by data points. They're driven by a crisis of confidence. So people tend to freak out and they sit on their money because they think times are going to get tough. And that's one of the reasons why it's so hard to forecast recessions, because you're talking about a psychological issue. You know, when do the animal spirits shift towards wealth preservation, you know, away from being willing to risk your capital? And it's mind-numbingly complex, if not almost impossible, but I find it so fascinating that people want to know. And so everybody looks at forecasts. You know, it's like weather. You know, they've determined that it's impossible to predict weather most times past 24 hours. But we all want to know whether we're going to get 2 to 4, 3 to 5, 4 to 6. The hourly we have to get up in the morning to deal with the snow. And it's almost impossible, fairly good analogy, in terms of predicting recessions. So there's a point I'm getting at, which is, you know, a lot of folks need to just let that go. I mean, it'll come. Blink of an eye, they're over. I mean, most people don't even know we're in a recession until it's half over. The average is less than a couple of years, at least you measure it by stock prices.
Yeah, and I think, you know, timing is certainly one big piece of that. The other is always magnitude. That, you know, you put those two together, you get an idea for the real impact to the economy, to your portfolio. But I think the broader picture here is that the data alone isn't going to tell us very much about where we are, at least not while we're there. We're not going to know till much later that, yeah, it really was a recession, and yeah, this is how bad it really was. And it's something Joel and I joke about all the time is, the lag on some of this data alone makes it enough that, sometimes you'll be out of a recession by the time you figure out that you're really in it. And so I think so much more important to understand, as you say, kind of the direction the wind's blowing. And that's why we look at things like consumer confidence. We look at things like the housing data, because it really tells us how people are feeling right now, not just what the data says, but how people actually feel. And ultimately, you know, as you mentioned, it's that what we call typically a virtuous cycle, where people feel good and so they're willing to spend, and that reinforces the economy. It makes them feel better because the economy is doing well and so they spend more. And with, you know, the U.S. economy nearly 70% consumer spending, it's real easy for consumers who feel good to make that actually happen, that self-fulfilling prophecy. And, you know, the challenge is the other side of that, the vicious cycle. When people feel bad about the direction of the economy or about something that's going on, they can tend to maybe tighten the purse strings, maybe not spend the way they should. I mean, that goes for corporations as well, maybe unwilling to raise employee wages or make new hires or any of those things that might drive the ability for people to spend. All of those things fill that cycle. They help to drive, whether you're talking about the virtuous cycle, drive things higher, or that vicious cycle, to drive things lower. I mean, so incredibly important, I think, to get a sense for what direction the wind is blowing, but understand that so difficult to predict, even when you have the data, because it happens so much later. And then again, that piece that, I come back to, Isabel, with what you were talking about earlier and the importance of balance in trying to time things. It's not just about timing. It's also about magnitude. And we've talked quite a bit about how difficult it is to time things, but understand also that to predict the magnitude of recessions or the magnitude of market corrections is just as difficult, if not more difficult, to do than it is to predict the timing. And you can look at things like valuations. You can look at things like the way the wind is blowing to get a sense. But ultimately, it's that balance piece. It's putting all of these things together that gets you through it.
You know, and I think so often the context of all this is so out of whack sometimes. If I'm right about the article you're referencing, it talked a little bit about the dot-coms blowing up in 2001 and how, you know, that's what guys like you and I, you know, remember the dot-coms blowing up. But it was the technology stocks were less than 2% of the economy at the time, you know.
Exactly.
And yet, you know, that's the headline and that's how we feel and we're going to name it the dot-coms. And that got into everybody's head and became much more than just those, you know, billion-dollar dot-coms. outcomes, having some trouble with their stock prices and whatnot. So, it's hard to keep a sense in the moment of really what the magnitude even means of some of this data in the overall context of the economy and whatnot.
Talking to a retired weather guy here in town, meteorologist, about how hard it is really to predict weather past 24 hours, and he gave me a litany of issues where you have to figure out the temperature of the winds aloft, the direction of the winds aloft, the barometric pressure of the winds aloft. You need to know ground speed, ground temperature, the barometric pressure on the ground. And he rattled off about 18 other variables. And you got to get every one of those right for your forecast to come out right. And it's the same thing with predicting recession. So, you know, folks, I guess kind of where we're going with all this is build balanced portfolios so you got your bases covered. Number two, understand that, yeah, things are slowing down here a little bit. So, maybe time to take a little bit of money off the table, although we've been saying that for over half a year now. And thirdly, know that, when the storms come in, they blow through. The sun eventually comes out. The skies clear up and brighter days are ahead. Well, Brewers opening day next Thursday. You got to get excited. Here it comes, folks. Good luck, Brewers. That's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening to our show. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.